Third afternoon. second afternoon lecture, December the 16th, 1952. The remainder of the day, as tempting as it is to talk about aesthetics and this aspect, we can perhaps leave that later to another commentary lecture. I've got to go on with standard operating procedure issue five, or we'll never get through it. Somebody stuck me on a time drag. You got me thinking about flow here during the intermission. And it was very interesting, this is a comment, that the statement that there is really no such thing as an DC flow is very, very strange one to make until he added the rest of it, and that is, there is no such thing as a DC flow unless you change your viewpoint as fast as the flow shifts poles. So that if you insisted there was such a thing as a DC flow, or a single flow, in order to get a flow at all, and not change your viewpoint on it at all with the terminals, you would simply have to start putting up lower and lower and lower potentials, which would then run right straight down through the reasoning band, bringing down through the emotional band, and bringing down into the effort band, and bringing down to matter, and maybe that is a cycle of action, an insistence on a one-way flow. Because flows happen to be a very aberrative thing. I'm going to take up flows here. The standard operating procedure, issue 5, has as its fourth step the following. This technique is really known as either relocation of anchor points or flow balancing. When you start talking about flows, you are, of course, talking about terminals. When you're talking about terminals, you're talking about a special kind of anchor point. And as a result, when you go down through these various steps of Issue 5, Standard Operating Procedure, you find in spaceation that a person is able to hold a point quietly before him. If he can do that, hold this point quietly before him, you just go on with a complete spaceation, and of course he's out and pretty stable. Then you go on to step one again and finish one or two. That tells you that this person has a terminal. It tells you that this person has a flow potential which can be maintained because he can hold the terminal still. Really, if you want to get to that, he can go in for the mechanics of electronics, which require first and foremost some place from which to postulate into a space in which can be postulated a flow which must of necessity run between two or more terminals. And in order to get a flow running, you have to have a stable terminal. A fellow has to be able to locate his facsimiles. And the reason he has to locate his facsimiles out in space around him is not because he can't postulate and locate newly facsimiles. He can do that too. But because he's accustomed to using his old facsimiles and they've gradually caved in and he's lost their orientation point and he is trying to work on all sorts of things, flows between ridges and most enormous amount of automaticity contained in this, and if he can't locate his terminals anymore, he isn't going to be able to get a flow. Now, that's all very esoteric, but it happens to be quite... It follows very easily. A person has less and less energy to the direct degree that they are unable to locate their facsimiles or hold a terminal still. When you put this point out in space in step 3, this is essentially an effort to cut down automaticity. You don't have to know the electronics behind this thing, but there are electronics behind it, and you better know that there are some. It's just sufficient to know that the PC who can hold that point in space before him easily without a great deal of automaticity sitting in is then capable of getting a good, solid energy flow. Why? He can set up terminals. He's doing this all the time automatically. And so we've got a situation there which is quite simple. And your next boy down the line is having trouble with anchor points. And that's why the next step below, get a point and hold it still, is step four, and that addresses itself through anchor points and flow balancing. And it says right away, if this fellow can't hold a point still, then he's missing some of his points. And he has his anchor points probably staked out in his current lifetime childhood, and therefore he is trying to operate on these anchor points at some vast distance, and they're no longer serving as anchor points. So you better get rid of at least the most important anchor points on the case, which would be the anchor points in the proximity of the best beloved childhood home he had. The one he liked the most. The one he was accustomed to call his home and to think about in later years as the pleasantness of childhood. And that is, of course, the scene of anchor points. He's stuck on the track in book one terminology. He's parked there in childhood, and everybody knows that everybody gets parked in childhood, and everybody knew it all the time, and so forth. They didn't know why or how to free him, but everybody knew this anyhow. And the reason for that is the reason he's locked up on the track is he's got a couple of anchor points. And then everything's piling up on these anchor points. And the whole track is jamming in an effort to retain these anchor points. So, again, the most fascinating thing in the world. Now, we get a picture of somebody maybe in his middle life operating perhaps in Miami, Florida, working on anchor points of his boyhood home, which might have been in Brussels. And believe me, you can't find anything in Miami, Florida by orienting it against the anchor points of Brussels. You can't find a darn thing in New York City if your anchor points were in Brussels and your business was in Miami and you went to New York for a visit. You'd start to get lostiger and lostiger. And that's true of these individuals below case three. They get lost very easily. They get lost very quickly. And they get very confused about being lost, too. So, of course, step four, it is then really devotes itself toward carrying up the anchor points. You do that by getting a mock-up of this childhood home that he liked the most, and just multiplying it and dividing it and changing it and moving it front to back and around and putting it in yesterday and altering it. And that simple operation may itself stabilize it. That just might do that, at which moment you would go back to three and so on. But there's a lot more to step four than that. If you had a step four, you might as well do right then what is necessary before he's a stable beta queer. And that is balance his flows, relocate his anchor points. Now we could call this process give and take. Or we could call it a technical name, flow balancing. Let's call it both. Give and take is the better name because it says what he does and describes the process. So, here we have what has happened to an individual that causes him to start saying, what room? What wall? I can't be in my head. I'm not even in my head. Dispersal, negative space, if such a thing that exists.
And we have all these various manifestations from step two down. The worse he is, the more he needs give and take processing. It has several aspects. It is done very precisely. It's done by formula. It is necessary because you have to do this in order to give the Phaeton back his memory. And the Phaeton without his memory is not in very good condition. The rehabilitation of memory then is quite important. But the resolution of your low-tone case, which is sitting at I on the smallest and last end of the cycle within the cycle, DEI, and right down there at the bottom, you find a desire to be dead right down there. And this person is two steps below that. Their desire to be dead, and they can't even die. And they're raving mad at the same time. That would be the lowest level of that. And a little bit higher than that, the guy who can't have anything, who wants everything, and has to hold on to everything he ever had. Now, unfortunately, we've solved the capitalist. As a matter of fact, I wasn't going to give up this technique. But I see so many bright and shining faces before me that are unwilling to admit defeat. And there isn't any reason why I should cause you to do the extra 80 hours of auditing on the 5, 6, and 7 that you would otherwise have to do. So let's be big-hearted today and let these two into Valhalla. Now, there are people who have a great certainty that although the number of steps we have here are 7, that their case sits at 8. And as Herr Dr. Neuger has stated, if we had a 9... on a chart, they'd be sure they sat at 10. And as much as one can find randomity and interest and amusement in this extreme opinion, as hard as these people try to stay the way they are, in view of the fact that I'm very tired of auditors coming around and telling me he just doesn't want to get over his aberrations, that's all that's wrong with him, in view of the fact I'm tired of that and these other considerations, I'm forced to give you this technique. I was going to save it. I was going to save it, and at the end of track on the preparation of Scientology, which, by the way, is not my end of track, but this has got an end of track somewhere on the track. If you can't go on for the next 85 billion years in the mess universe saying yes, yes, well, now, I tell you, this is the way you do it, auditor. Can't be done. No randomity, you're getting static. I'm going to have to give up this technique. I was going to save it, though, and have it put in a tomb. See, and then mock up a body like this and have that buried in a tomb too, you see, and then people would be able to go by when it hadn't solved their case or something, and they could say, well, there is a technique in that tomb, but unfortunately it is written in International Morse, a dead language which existed in the 20th century, and nobody can decipher it. And they got the first two or three words out of it, and it was something like Gaitar. We finally figured out that what was meant by that was you hooked up this guy wire tower and you hooked up a boom to the preclear's head and got the Phaeton out with something else they used to talk about in those days, which was automagnetism. I thought that'd be a very good joke. But however, when I think of these fellows having to go on any further along the track in all this agony, and I think of your agony as an auditor in trying to solve their cases, Why, I take pity on you, but I want you to know that in this one, you owe me a favor. All this other stuff is yours for free, but this one, you owe me a favor. Because I didn't have to give you this one. The other techniques work. I may need a favor one of these days at the rate the rumor line goes. They have a special rumor machine. It's hooked into an ENIAC that is kept at Massachusetts Institute of Technology and has some of its branch parts at Bell Labs in New Jersey. And this turns out rumors at random. And these rumors are picked up, and they apply to anybody. You just put anybody's name on them, you see, and you've got a rumor. Well, that is quite a scientific accomplishment. But one of these slots got stuck and started to deliver everything that it was manufacturing into the middle of the United States, and it kept coming out, one of the stampers on it got stuck too, and it kept coming out Scientology. And I've got to write a letter to Massachusetts Institute of Technology, some of these other organizations, and ask them to please turn the machine off for a short time until we get the rumors sorted out and get them properly distributed, because they're jamming and contradicting each other. I understand that today I was jailed by the FBI for inciting, a veteran to go into a foreign war, or I'm not quite sure what it was. Oh, yeah, for not being a communist, or I think that, because my party card is in good condition. I belong to everything. I'm a Democrat, a Republican, a Socialist, a Communist. I will arise, say, Birmingham Burying Society. I'm a member of everything. Baptist Church. I'm for everything, too. So, these rumor machines get to work on it. And one of these fine days, you as an auditor may get some preclear up to a level where he doesn't believe each rumor which is handed to him. Because your preclears get very confused when 8 or 9 of these rumors are handed to them in a group from the same source, each one contradicting the last. And the having to believe all 9 almost splits their skull open. And when they fall into the category of a step 4 or step 5 or step 6 or step 7 case, of course, it does split their skull open. Well, this is an easy way to get the Satan out. It gets the carpet bloody and so forth. That's not a recommended process, blow him up by feeding him rumors. So when we get into this Geitzah processing here, I actually hate to give you this. I do. I do. Well, it spoils something. It spoils your randomity. There will always be creep. You don't mind. Good. I'm not going to give you that. I'll give you this headache. Well, I want to tell you about this. Now, the hero, this is more important, Dana. Listen to that. You'll find many pre-clears in this kind of a condition. Did you ever hear of winning much better than winning? The way you win much better than winning is to win while wounded. Used in every novel. The hero gets wounded just before he finally knifes the villain in the back, which is a heroic act because he's the hero. And you'll find many of your bodies playing this role. The hero who plays the game while wounded. He's really a hero. And this guy will come in and he will be winning, vaguely, just because he's... And he come in, and the only reason he comes in to see you is so that everybody will know now that he was wounded, but he was winning anyway. It's just to make the game tougher. You put more restriction on yourself, see, than anybody could possibly stand, and then still win, and that increases the nobility and the glory and the purity of it all. And this comes under the heading of, and you'll find a lot of preachers under this heading, the glory of being restricted and still winning. A lot of people who spent half the last war in hospitals and so forth were solely there because I swear they saw the bullet coming, and they just moved sideways and into it, you see, so that they could win and be wounded at the same time. Now another item. The greatest pretense there is the pretense that it is not all pretense. Pretending that it is not all pretense. That is the biggest pretense there is. Now you'll find everybody more or less doing that. They're making sure that everything is real instead of actual. And they know darn well they're pretending. You start cracking this, you'll get that feeling off of ridges ad infinitum. Now we'll go on to some other. Pardon, sir. Well, you said you didn't want that thing, huh? Huh? Nobody said that. I must have been getting a backlash on the phone. All right. Very good. He'd like a chance to disagree with him. Well, now, this will be mimeographed up, but I'd advise you, in view of the fact that I haven't spoken to the management about that, to take down some of these steps. And this is really step four. He mocks up his childhood home in order to recover those anchor points. He puts it under control by turning it colors, by moving it in various ways, by putting it behind him, ahead of him, around him, and finally by putting it into the past and then mocking it up again and getting a lot of them. And then he sets this thing in various locales where it couldn't possibly be. He puts it in Washington, he puts it in London, he puts it in Birmingham, he puts it in Scotland, he puts it in Ireland, he puts it over in New Jersey, he puts it in Alaska, he puts it in China, and he gets it carefully oriented there each time. And then puts it into yesterday, and puts it into last year, and so on, until he's really blown those anchor points up. Now, there's some refinements that he can do on these techniques if he's pretty good and you're working a higher tone, pretty clear and a foreign. There's refinements that are lovely. You take all your anchor points you ever had in the mesh universe, now connect each one to the next one. Now connect those lines all together. Now turn them upright and have them run up into the sky. Now bring them down and condense them into a ball. And now put that anchor point where you would like to have an anchor point. Now, that's an interesting little variation on that. But that is not give-and-take processing. Give-and-take processing becomes so excessively easy on you that any girl who is even on the lower band, or kid that is on the lower band, he's giving everything up, he's unstable, abandonment, he runs away, fight easily, homo sapiens. Or the fellow who is chunky and big and beefy and so forth and is holding on madly to everything and won't let anything go away. Life's very serious for him. They're your rough cases because they're your only lower tone cases. And that applies from cases from three down. What's wrong with them? Well, the same thing's wrong with them. Deprives them of their memory. And I'm going to give you, as I told you in a little earlier lecture, a whole rundown on memory. But this process, I will tell you, just as a process, and whether you ever remember anything about the memory or not, is beside the point. So I'm going to read this off. A PC who can mock up his childhood home and bring it under control can regain many anchor points. He is then able to remedy his main difficulty, too much loss, too much havingness. Sounds non-secretive, it won't. I'll give you a rundown on this. The PC finds it necessary to take hold of everything and thus lose nothing, or he finds it necessary to give everything away in order to hold, at a minimum, his own body. The fuller's basic trouble, and the basic trouble in any case from two down, is the necessity to obey missed action. Pardon me. To obey missed anchor points. And to obey missed flows. If you were to run obey flows as a concept, an individual would practically cave in because it's all over the track. He's supposed to obey flows. He's supposed to obey perceptic flows. He's supposed to obey flows of speech. He's supposed to obey electronic currents. He's supposed to obey all these things. And obey flows is his basic difficulty. All right. He gets down to a point where his only actual anchor points are bodies. And the only objects he cares about, really, are bodies and things associated with bodies. Think of that for a minute. His anchor points are bodies. This guy is sort of hanging off in a negative space aspect and looking around, and there he has a body. And he orients everything where this body is, and everything is kind of blurred out and beyond the body. But up close to the body, he can... You don't believe this? You know, you don't get the impact of this. And when I say when he perceives his body, and when he knows his body, and when he's using his body as an anchor point, I mean just that. And if you don't quite see that, how many people in this room felt that streetcar motorman go by this instant? Nobody. That's within your perceptic area. Nobody tasted the workman's lunchbox that was on that streetcar. Not a single person here. As far as the wall back there is concerned, none of you have had any tactile on that wall for a long time now. And some of you might have felt it. Very few of you I'll bet you nobody has felt the silkiness of that tie in looking at me, if you're obviously looking at me. It's within your field of perceptive experience. Just looking at something is not really experiencing it. That's a sort of a, let's draw back and be coy. But there are very few of you here who haven't felt the beating of your heart or your lungs or the warmth of your body or the position of your head or your face. And that is the limit of experience in the body. And that's pretty narrow. Therefore, that anchor point, which is the most reliable, is the anchor point which lies within the limit of experience, and which is the limit of experience. And a true anchor point is the limit of experience. What are my anchor points? Well, I've got a lot of points out there, you say. But what are my anchor points? Well, my anchor points are actually the boundaries of what I'm experiencing. That's my space. If you're in the messed universe, you're living on borrowed space. So you just simply, you would throw out your limits of experience, and this would be the limit of experience, and that would be your anchor point. But you'd experience everything out to the limit of the anchor point to the degree that you know that your mouth at this moment is wet. You know, that might give you some kind of an idea of what it feels like to be alive. That's not said sarcastically. I mean, that's the first time I've had an adequate communication phrase to describe that feeling of being aliveness. You know, you go down the street and the whole street is alive from side to side. That's that. The bricks on both sides of the street are in a sphere of experience. That's how big you are. You don't talk to somebody. You experience what that person is experiencing. And that's communication. And that person then experiences something aesthetic or extraordinary just to demonstrate to you that he is experiencing. So you get an interchange then, which is the uptone level of what talk might be. Speech. Speech is trying to tell somebody, I and you are experiencing. We're co-experiencing something or other, or we're discussing the co-experience of something, but this by speaking, we are co-experiencing, and by speaking, you see, you're saying, you're alive, and I'm saying, I'm alive. We're demonstrating it by keeping up a communication flow. It's simple. So what do you do on a higher level than that?
You communicate by experiencing what the other person's experiencing at the moment. That only gets to be uncomfortable when a fellow gets to be very, very shy, when he's so unethical as to be burying all sorts of
memories and experiences, and he wants to hide things, and he's not strong enough to hold and protect himself and other things. He has to be pretty strong in order to have a completely wide-open front door, wide-open memory bank, and so on. And if somebody comes along and steals something out of the memory bank, he has to be strong enough to say, zap, and take it back and put it back probably a minute back, or make something new take its place. By playing off a good joke on this fellow by getting a hold of it and making him take five more. That is what we mean by experience, and that is what we mean by communication. You've had no adequate technique to reestablish this. You'd better reestablish it in terms of what is my sphere of experience. Well, my sphere of experience is the boundaries of my own anchor points, really. You see, there could be primary and secondary anchor points. There'd be anchor points which denote the space in which I own things or have things. There is the anchor points of that space which encloses all things, which I am not necessarily experiencing. And there would be the boundaries of what I am immediately experiencing. And those would be the primary anchor points. You know, the secondary anchor points. The only reason you'd ever have those secondary ones out is so you could find once more what you had. That's all. Man, they don't even become very important. This part, the horrible part of this universe is the less you need something, the less you need something, the more valuable it is. The less you need something, actual it is. I mean, a fellow who doesn't vaguely need anchor points has the doggonest, strongest anchor points you ever ran across. I mean, these anchor points are stretched out about 8 light years in that direction and 10 in this direction, and there's some haddingness over there about 20 light years back, and he could go and find those things just bang. Any moment, he knows everything that's going on if he has to, anywhere amongst them. And his immediate line of experience is maybe a couple hundred feet. Just because it suits him not to experience anything any further than a couple of hundred feet. Here on Earth, of course, a person has contracted his experience sphere. New technical term, Boyle. His experience sphere is contracting continually until what is it? It's a body. Therefore, his primary anchor points are in the limits of the body. So bodies mean an awful lot to him. And you take anybody below two and take his body away from him? Or threaten to take his body away from him? Well, he can't do a thing. He knows with the body gone, he knows nothing. And sure enough, although we turn on that e-meter and find out that all the facsimiles are there regarding all sorts of existences, coexistences going on at the present instant, all sorts of facsimiles that represented some sort of past existences and all that sort of thing, for a fellow to remember any of these things very directly and say, well, or a couple of fellows to be yarning along and accept each other with complete confidence and truth, the fellow says, well, I remember there at the Battle of Hastings, we had a fellow named Bilk. And he was, I think, a lance corporal. And yeah, he was a lance corporal. And anyway, this fellow and the captain's horse, and big anecdote goes on, and the fellow said, I knew a fellow once that knew this fellow, Bilk. Yeah, that's fine. And that would be ordinary conversation. If you had direct memory on these things. Well, why haven't you got direct memory on them? Because you haven't got a body to orient the facsimiles by. If you haven't got that body with which to orient the facsimiles, you haven't got those anchor points, so therefore that experience doesn't exist. You've just got a picture of a park someplace, and you can't get hold of it because the anchor point's there. So, and furthermore, you wouldn't have enough capability of reestablishing anchor points to just recapture and view the experience with complete actuality in the absence of pre-established anchor points. You just go back and pick up all the old anchor points. Your experience is not wise. That'd be very simple then. So, anchor points and bodies and things. Now, a person much less uses corners when he becomes aberrated for anchor points, the corners of spaces, than he does the things in the spaces. For instance, you orient this room ordinarily with this platform, or that table, or this white board up here on the wall, or those seats. Not by its corners. And of course, those seats and the whiteboard and the platform and the table are just objects.
They are of the least possible importance where it comes to orientation, because anybody could fool with them. They could kick this platform over many inches and move that board over many inches or lower it many inches and shift that table around without your beginning to notice it. But more important than that, you might notice that in relationship to your seats and each other, but they could shift those anchor points called the corners out there 3-4 feet. If all these other things remain constant, nobody'd ever even notice it. Move them in, shift them out. They could have been going, these anchor points up here in the corner actually could have been going like an accordion all during this lecture. I don't think anybody would have seen it. The importance then of the object as an anchor point is denotes a fairly low action in perception and experience. Object becomes the anchor point. Instead of just putting our anchor points, the fellow looks for an object to be his anchor point. One of the most confusing anchor points there is then is a body, because it's in motion and it's an object. This almost drives a baby batty. He looks at Mama. And Mama is on her way this way and off there again that way, and she's someplace else. And when he thinks of home, or he thinks of the room or something of the sort, he thinks of Mama. She's a more valuable object. Anything which has already been conquered by life is more valuable than those things which have merely been molded by life. Anything which is animated by life is more important to a living thing than those things which are merely molded by life. And therefore, bodies are quite important. Live things are more important than wind-up things. They have to be imbued with life before they become valuable. And as a consequence, a valuable object has now become, in our aberrated pre-clear state, frame of mind, an object has become an anchor point. Therefore, let's take the most valuable object around and call it the anchor point, of course. Sound? No trouble at all. Except complete and endless confusion from there on, because the anchor point will then up and die. It moves around. It disappears. Look at a child. A child gets frantic when Mom and Papa disappear over a long period of time. He's lost his anchor points. He doesn't have anchor points in the corners of the room because he doesn't feel free enough to pervade this room and experience it in any way. And he isn't putting out anchor points of his own. His disability in this is terrible. And so Mama disappears for the afternoon. The afternoon then is completely lost. And somebody came along a few days later and asked this little boy, Johnny, what'd you do the other afternoon when your mama's gone? He'd say, I don't know. That's right. He lost his anchor point. He, in one way, he's trying to get away from a lonely and painful period, but the more impertinent answer is the fact that how does he know he didn't have his anchor point? Now you wonder why people believe what Mama tells them. Now we've got this horrible extremity, a communicating anchor point, without which one is not only lost, but is not fed, not clothed, and in short, lost in terms of all havingness. That's just the end of track as far as the baby is concerned, the disappearance of Mama. Now, if this is true of a child who has been with his mother as little as 2 or 3 weeks after birth and then loses her, it'll show up on the child. It really will. Of course, Mama's been the only anchor point this body had, this GE had, for months. And naturally, we just swing in there on that, and it just continues, and then all of a sudden, Mom isn't there anymore. Continuing the... Geez, that happened in the second hour of lecture?
Yeah.
You're good people. The last half hour, the second hour of the lecture, December the 16th, 1952. The process which we're talking about then peculiarly fits everyone from 3 down. And in just reading this over,
A PC who can mock up his childhood home and bring it under control can regain many anchor points. He is then able to remedy his main difficulty, too much loss, too much happiness. I'll go into that. The PC finds it necessary to take and hold everything and thus lose nothing. Or if he finds it necessary to give everything away in order to hold at the minimum of his body, he does that. The four's basic trouble is obey, nest, anchor points, and flows. He feels he must obey them, not originate them. Now, his main trouble, as I was explaining to you, is that bodies are used by him as anchor points and are communicating anchor points. And these bodies, being ambulant, make it very confusing. Thus, we have him holding on to bodies as hard as he would ordinarily hold on to anchor points. And the confusion between these two, bodies and anchor points, is at the root of the 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7's inability to have enough space to exit into, to exteriorize into. His lack of space, which is to say his lack of anchor points, and his tremendous havingness with regard to objects. Stick him. And you find him stuck in his body, but thinking he's outside of his body, but maybe he's never been in his body. He's in negative space. And this gets very arduous. He gets very upset about this. When you suddenly say to him, all right, be 2 feet back of your head. He's got an idea he's never been in that head in the first place. He knows he's really not ever been in the head somehow or other, because he's kind of the body, and he's sort of holding on hard, and he's doing a lot of things, but he can feel all through the body. And that, to him, is a grasp of reality and actuality, too. He confuses the two, and quite in addition to that, it's his only anchor point. The body goes around and finds anchor points. And without an anchor point, without an identity, I mean, without a body, without an identity, he wouldn't have an anchor point. So you're suddenly asking him to shoot the moon in a grand way. And the guy says, no. You'll find practically anybody that will do anything to trap a Phaeton is from 3 down. And your people from 3 down do not necessarily by far operate in this direction, but a few in this category will go to extraordinary lengths to make a pre-clear intensely uncomfortable, to upset him, invalidate him, evaluate for him, particularly the last, almost anything. And the job on a 3, if you were to directly address theta clearing and were to insist this way, and that was his goal, he would just continue to go down in tone, down in tone, down in tone, down in tone. Unless you had these processes to keep picking him up, 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 up. Because he recognized, basically, that there was considerable truth in what you were doing. And he wouldn't be able to face that truth. He's well below 0 on the sub-zero tone scale as a Phaeton, and his whole beingness rebels at something he cannot accept readily. But with a technique, of course, which makes him spot a point, if he can spot a point, mock up his home, and the remainder of this balancing technique. Well, he's all right, because then you get down to 5 and you get control, dot. You're picking up his reality. Something other is happening. Something is happening all the time to him, right along the line, and he is perfectly content to sort of greet the idea of a theta clear that's quite unreal and probably not applicable to him, but he'll go along with it because you seem so interested. And he's liable to have a very patronizing attitude toward it all. And he's liable to just dote on telling you failures, too, depending on where he is. You see, these steps don't place a man on a tone scale. They put these people, the condition. Other things place him on a tone scale. We've gone into that. So you get a great variation in there. Now, the process consists of causing him to take in the order given below, large numbers of things, and by bringing them into his body, condensing them, and then sending them out, This remedies excessive holding to articles, facsimiles, and old sensations. Well, that's markups. Now, if he can do the old home and handle the old home as a markup, no matter how poorly, how thinly, with what degree of struggle and unreality, if he can do that, he can do the rest of this process. Because this requires no great exactness in the construction of a markup. And you are making the mock-ups do exactly what every object does in flows in his vicinity, as I will show you when I finish this. Now, when the preclear must give up everything, you know, lower the eye, inhibit part of the scale, they have to give up, abandon. You know, one fellow holds on, he's sometimes quite beefy, and sometimes very thin, and he's got to give away everything. Now, people who want that giveaway are in a highly propitiative level most of the time. But you understand, of course, that this, the inner cycle of a big cycle, you've got a grand cycle, that this fellow who is trying to hold on to everything may be up there around four, Homo sapiens. And another one trying to hold on to everything, he wouldn't be trying to hold on to everything at four, he would be holding on to everything at three. Excuse me. The fellow at 1.5 is trying to hold on to everything in a similar way. But the person at fear is trying to give everything away. And now we go right down below fear and we find out a person in grief is still desperately trying to hold on to everything. And right down below grief, before we get to apathy, we have a flow there, a dispersal rather, where he's trying to give everything away again. And then we don't get into the next emotion below that until we've gone through that giveaway. Then we get into apathy, one level of apathy, which is hold on to everything again. And then it sinks into a flow and dispersal emotions, which aren't named, where they're trying to give everything away again. So you see, whether or not the fellow receives these things in or sends them out again isn't spotted by his place on the tone scale. It's just this manifestation. But if he is fairly strong as an individual, and he has fallen into one of these hold everything, he is liable to be fluctuating between a hold and give away or a flow in and hold. And you don't care where he is. You just start with this process and you take a look at him and just make an estimate. Is this person in propitiation or is he trying to give everything or is he trying to take things? Now, that's all you establish. And then you make up all these mock-ups, however unreal, at a distance from a person who's trying to take things, and you have them move into his body. And then you mock up duplicates for all of them and have them move into his body. Once in a while, they won't move into his body. So how do you hold it? You get a mock-up, and then you make him turn it red, turn it blue, and it'll jump in. Jump right into his body. Boom. Almost an automaticity. And you're using that automaticity and putting it under control. Now, the next thing that he's got a mock-up, and it won't move in. He turns it red, he turns blue, nothing happens. Make up another one, and another one, and another one, and up, bang. The last one will jump in, the next one will jump in, and it'll just run off, brrr, and he'll have them all in. Now, when the fellow is trying to give things away, you might have somebody who is taking in, as I said, various points on the scale, but you've got other people who are propitiated trying to give away, and every time he mocks up anything, it disappears. And we've never quite traced what happened. You look over there, he mocks up something, and gone. And he mocks up something, gone. Mocks up something, gone. You say, where are these things going? Of course, you know where he is. You're trying to do orientation. You get a mock-up. You know exactly what you're doing. You're doing exactly this. And your single discernment necessary on this is, have you properly brought him to that point by making these other tests? Is he really four? And when he makes up a mock-up, and when he's doing the old homestead, watch for this. Does it tend to fly in and hit him in the face? Or does it intend to get smaller and go in every time he mocks it up? Which? And the only reason you want to know this is because, do you get him to create in his body mock-ups and then push them out in all directions? Or do you get him to make mock-ups out there and pull them in from all directions? Now, you put them in a body and they won't move out. That's quite a trick. You say right where you're standing now, mark up a beautiful young man. Oh, very, very gorgeous young man. Now, mark him up right where you're standing. Tell him this girl is. She says, nothing happens to this young man. He stays there. It didn't go away. That's what you wanted to say. So you say, put it out in front of you now. You're not trying for the actual people. You're trying for mock-ups. You're not running facsimiles. You're running built things in present time with live mock-ups. You understand? And let's not get facsimiles mixed up in it, because the preacher who does this with his eyes shut at this level of the tone scale gets facsimiles, not mock-ups. So, eyes wide open on that step. Eyes wide open on four. All right. It still doesn't move out. She can't move this young man out. Then two conditions exist. She either must mock up one out there and bring it in, or she just changes the hue, color, and characteristics of this young man. And she does that a couple of times. It goes wham. It'll go away. It'll leave. And you say, well, I'll push it way out there. Of course, that's going way out there. And so she says, okay, I'm pushing. Now you say, mock up another young man. Yeah. No, he's not leaving either. Well, make him blue, make him green, give him purple hair, anything. And it doesn't move out. Make her mock up another one in the body alongside of it. And another one in the body alongside of it. And all of a sudden, the last one she mocks up will go wham, wham. And the first one she mocked up will go out, too. This is automaticity, and you're using it. Why can't a fellow get a hold of his facsimiles? And why can't a fellow, no matter how hard he tries to get those facsimiles, why can't he get them? I'm going to give a long talk on that as soon as this part of this lecture is finished. Or if he doesn't want his facsimiles, why can't he get rid of them? It's all answered in this. And here's the list of things that you do this trick with. You do them in this order. One, vast numbers of the opposite sex. They're thin and out. Now, the next one, vast numbers of friends. His bodies that he labels friends, you understand, they can be actual friends and will turn into them. Three, bodies which might have been his own. They're just mock-ups, you understand. You're not trying to get the old body. You're just trying to get pictures of bodies, mock-ups of bodies. Four, hordes of parents and relations. Five, many graves. The girl who's trying to give away will have the graves flowing out. The girl who is trying to hold in will get those graves slapping her in the face so fast, and all of a sudden she'll say, wait a minute, there's a grave there that isn't snapping in. And you say, all right, make another one like it, or turn it red, turn it blue. And if it's still difficult, do both. Turn it red, turn it blue, make another one, brrr. She'll get all three of them. Now, what she do with these, by the way, when they come into the body? You tell her to pack them down. Pack them down real tight, and she'll begin to feel like she's exploding after a while. Or you tell her to make them go way away with this kind of a case. Yeah, make them go further. Make them just get out there and disperse. Next six, an enormous number of buildings and homes. And of course, that's your mock-up there that you start with. And all kinds of castles or cuts, and you just make a mock-up anything and everything. Do this whole thing for the whole track, you see. Now, seven, vast quantities of food. Eight, enormous quantities of raiment. Girl with no appetite, by the way, is not able to bring food in. If she had food, it would simply leave. You would put a loaf of bread where her head is, and the next thing you know, she'd see this loaf of bread flying out behind her at a mad rate to a considerable distance. She wouldn't be able to hold on to this loaf of bread. Or she'd be having difficulties handling it in a flow level. Enormous quantities of raiment. Nine, vast sums of money in many forms, bills, and coinage. 10, great numbers of jewels. 11, weapons and energy beams. The person's getting awful well off by this time, believe me. 12, communications, like letters, voice, anything. 13, emotions. And 14, last but not least, sensations. Get sensations flying in, sensations flying out, and so on. Now, each item is run in or out and then made to go in the opposite direction. It will be found that the PC will let the action continue so far, at which moment it is reversed in direction. In other words, you say, all right, now this fellow that's holding them, you say, got all this packed in. Now we've got them all packed in, now start them leaving. And they go two steps. And he can't move them a bit further, and he won't go another step. He's got 8 billion women, by rough calculation, have been packed in on it, and they go 2 steps, the first layer, and that's all. You just make 8 billion more women and pack them in. And the next time, he can go 4 steps. Pretty good. Now we take 82 billion women and bring those in practically singly, and then they start coming in flows and lots of them, and so on, and then we start them going out. What do you know? They go 10 steps before they suddenly falter and start slapping you back in the face. All right. The girl who has got stuff going out, so forth, wait till she can bring something in comfortably. And then make her start bringing these things in, because she's going to do what it says here. Change and draw all mock-ups. Use them in a 360-degree sphere. In other words, don't just process out the front, back, above the head, lower feet. It's very funny, but blanketing starts showing up on that first one like mad. Angels start to fly up from below and down from above. The second you start to mock up women for a man and for a girl, other kinds of angels will do the same thing. Continue the process, adding the items which the PC thinks undesirable. Now, go on the reverse. Instead of bodies he didn't want. Now we've got the reverse. Because your fellow that's holding is also trying to select out. And now you make all his enemies. Bad communications. Just the negative of that. And make these fly out away from him. He's trying to hold him. Now you will enemies. They're on their way out. Okay. Now, items to think, continuing the process, adding the items which PC thinks is undesirable, and send these for a take case out. And for a give case in. Just reverse them. These would include enemies, harmful things, ugly and disgusting things as demonstrated by the assessment. And here's your assessment suddenly showing up as tremendously valuable. You want to know what this fellow's trying to hold on to. You want to know what this fellow's trying to get rid of. And what he's trying to get rid of, he's trying to destroy. What he's trying to hold on to, he will show up on the create or grab a whole level. So you can take that as part of your assessment piece line. As the direction for either a give or a take will eventually shift, the give becoming a take and the take reaching a new level of give, the process must be continued until the PC is simply, quote, cured, unquote, of wanting, having, or not having. Not until. It mustn't be continued just until that happens. But until he is splendidly light-hearted about the control and its possession. Now, you just beat this one to death. I don't care how many hours you put in about it, because the number of hours it took in the past to free what we had at a level 4 were a great many. There are 50, 80. You could easily put in 30 hours of this kind of auditing on one of these people with great profit. Because this is just a technique. Now let's look at something else. What about the overt act? Every once in a while when he starts to run kind of sticky, so thousands of women out there and start to have him pass around his body. And of course there are 4 flows, 4 pressures on every flow. The outflow, the restraint of the outflow, the thing that's trying to arrest the outflow from the opposite end, and the thing that's trying to inhibit the arrestment of the outflow from that end. Now if you want a good gag, mock up a body out here, and now try to put a bell on it and try to pull it towards you. Good gag, isn't it? All right, now this is the mess universe, 180 degree vector. Now give it a push that way. Isn't that interesting? All right, now get it trying to resist being pushed that way. Now get it trying to resist being pulled that way. And you'll see this thing at work. Now, it works 4 flows out like that, too. Now, as these women or men all walk out from this PC, they'll all of a sudden get out there so far and stick them. You don't know how to make them go any further? All you have to do is put a big loop around all of them and get a slight tug. And they all go out further, of course. And if they're coming in too fast and you want to stop them from coming in fast or something of the sort, just put a hook around the inner ring and open it up a little bit. Of course, they come in like mad. So you can just govern these flows like you would handle puppets. And that accounts for and eradicates flows as an obsession, a compulsion, an inhibition, or a desire on the part of a PC. And everything that's wrong with a 3, really, a 4, a 5, a 6, and a 7, is they obey flows and mess anchor points. And they thoroughly have anchor points mixed up with ambulant points, bodies. Now, that is the technique. That's give-and-take processing. You follow this list of things with a pre-clear with whom you're having trouble. Don't care how accurately he gets them, what happens to these things, whether or not he gets them into the past. What you do with them, it doesn't matter what you, how good you do this process. Just do it well enough so that each time he knows he's got them coming in himself. And he knows he's got them going out himself. And he'll start to get very interested and very original about this whole thing. There's things you can mark up when you say jewels, also things like medals. You can use a great deal of virtuosity. And there's a whole list of hateful things which the Johnson office wouldn't permit me to write. Gives me the hate button. And that is give and take processing. Now, you understand the theory of flows. We covered that earlier in the course. You just do this with objects. And not to run flows. At first, he'll identify with the flows. Then he'll merely associate with the flows. And then the flows won't have anything to do with it. And you've sprung him up the scale and got differentiation. And that is what you're trying to achieve with your pre-clear. And this solves any case that was tough beyond the level of one. Amen. Let's change the reel. And get our...